a decade ago, I started to tell my colleagues, there is something big here in the therapeutic room. And if we don't talk about it, so if we don't speak it up in the therapeutic room and during supervision, so there is something missing here. We're not talking about two people who can speak on only on the humanistic level, just to be human one to the other, or good object one to the other, or we have to talk about what is going outside and how everyone of the this dyad, of this therapeutic dyad, is coming from a threatening group to the other.
Welcome to the IPA podcast, Psychoanalysis on and Off the Couch. This podcast series introduces the many analysts around the world who, in addition to working in their consulting rooms, on the couch, they also work outside their offices. They take their psychoanalytic skills and they bring them to many other venues. They bring them to hospitals, to refugee centers, to business leaders, to childcare clinics, to prisons, just to name a sampling of the many conversations we've had. We've also spoken with analysts again around the world about how they and their patients have been struggling with the COVID crisis. And finally, we speak to a group of analysts who meet the criteria, shall we say, of being the elders of our field. They have been practicing analysis for 40 and 50 years and have special perspectives on this particular period of history and an overview on what the field has been like and how it's evolved over the past half century. I hope you find these conversations engaging and thought-provoking. Please feel free to write comments at our website, ipaoffthecouch.org, and thank you for listening. Welcome to today's podcast. I am Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Dr. Ronnie Sroor. In today's conversation, we discuss the meaning of ethnic affiliations in the therapeutic dyad. Dr. Sroor is a Palestinian-Israeli Christian psychologist living and working in Haifa. And we discuss what it means to belong to that ethnic mix, what it means for him, how he makes sense of what he feels at times are conflicting identifications, and for our purposes, even more poignantly, how it lives in his clinical work. And we focus on the challenges that he faces in working with Jewish patients, at times nationalistically Jewish Israeli patients. And he gives us really poignant examples of working through what he calls his political or cultural countertransference in order to locate the inner workings of his patient's mind. It's really a testimony to the power of the method and the power of his immersion in the method and the honesty with which he brings to both. I found it a very moving conversation. As I say, he's a Palestinian-Israeli clinical and educational psychologist. He's married and the father of two sons. He lives in Haifa, and he works as a psychologist in the Israeli Ministry of Health and Private Practice. He teaches and researches psychodynamic psychotherapy with cultural and political competence. It's the name of the course he teaches at the University of Haifa. He's a lecturer and supervisor of two postgraduate programs in psychotherapy, and he characterizes himself as an activist in the field of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's a special conversation, not the kind of thing one ordinarily hears in professional discourse. It has a degree of self-revelation and honesty that I think is important to share, and I hope you find it as meaningful as I did. Here's my conversation with Dr. Ronnie Sroor. Ronnie, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
Ronnie, we've all been exposed to literal external dangers that have a presence recently. We've all been through COVID. We know what it's like when there's danger about, and we know what it's like to deal with the emotional reaction to danger. You live in Israel and have experienced, by virtue of that, also literal dangers about you and at times of a violent sort. So you're very familiar with the presence of violence and what it's like for everyone to be living with, and in particular for our conversation, how it lives in your mind as a clinician and in your patient's mind, and how it impacts the therapeutic process. And it's not only literal violence and literal danger, as powerful as that is, that impacts the clinical work, but also all of our large group affiliations. We all belong to large groups, and we all have mostly warm connections to our large groups. Certainly, again, you in Israel live among many large groups that are intensely attached to and often intensely in conflict with other large groups. These groups have powerful cultural loyalties, deep ethnic allegiances. And who we are as members of large groups, of course, also impacts our clinical work. And it impacts the work whether we ostensibly share the same large group as our patients, or in different ways if we are of different large groups of our patients. And that's something that you've written about.
Yeah.
How about if you start us off by sharing who you are, what your ethnic affiliations are, and then from there we can go to how that lives and how you work with that in the clinical situation.
Wow, many big issues opening in your introduction. Big, important, and very much occupying my thinking in the last few years. Well, I'm Roni Sroor. I'm a Palestinian-Israeli clinical psychologist, Christian as well, and I'm blind myself. I live in Haifa, which is on the northern shore of Israel, northern part. I'm a father and have two kids. Speaking of the violence, well, yeah, I've been raised in this country and I'm a citizen of Israel, and I am Palestinian on my national identity. And here in Israel, nationality is not citizenship. There's a difference between them. I am Palestinian on my national identity. I'm a Christian on my religion, and I'm Israeli on my citizenship. And many times these three identities do not fit and do not live in peace, not on the outside world, in the reality world, and not in the internal world. Well, as you always hear in the news that many violence are going here between Israelis and Palestinians. I am a Palestinian who live inside Israel and not in the West Bank, and neither not in Gaza. Less violence here inside Israel, although last month there was a violent few days of violence here inside Israel between the Arab-Palestinian community who are citizens in Israel and with the police. And settlers came out of the city of Haifa and started to be violent to the Arab citizens inside Haifa. But usually we don't have these scenes here in Haifa. But even if I live in Galilee, in Haifa, I always hear on the news what is going on the West Bank and in Gaza, and I am conflicting inside myself. Well, my nation, which I identify with is fighting my country, the country that I live in, and I'm working according to its laws. And I feel pity for what is going there on the two sides, and I have very, very, very complicated emotions on that level. And as a clinician, when we talk about emotions and internal conflicts, so that's the issue. That's the material right. that we work mm-hmm. with. So being a part of the Palestinian nation and at the same time part of the Israeli state makes it very complicated to be a clinician in this situation, either while working with the Palestinian people or when working with Jewish Israeli people inside the clinical and the therapeutic room, the therapeutic setting. It is complicated on few levels, and more than one level. I will mention one or two, and then we'll see where we go. On the external level, when I work with a Jewish patient, for example, and we both know that there is violence in the West Bank or in Gaza between the Israeli army and the Palestinian people, we both have this feeling of what is the other field thinking about me? Does he think that I'm against Israelis and pro-Palestinian? Or does he think I am conflicting in myself? What is going on? Can we talk about it freely in the therapeutic room? Or how much I can share my patients with what I'm thinking? And how can you use this material? And this is the other level.
Let me just understand to be sure. What you just said is, can I speak of it? Is that your thought? Or is that what you imagine your patient's thought is? Or what your patient reveals to you?
Yeah, I think
or both?
We both think about that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. I think we both think about these issues. Because in the cases that I could open it, and it was safe enough in the room to for these issues to be open, I know that the patient is preoccupied with it. And my
is deeply what? Sorry, say it again. Is
the patient is preoccupied with this.
Oh,
he's,
preoccupied.
He's thinking
with it, yes.
about it.
Uh-huh. Right.
And also my colleagues, when I open this with my colleagues, they are thinking about it. And they do not feel safe and sometimes suspicious about what I think and who am I and who am I loyal to. And sometimes we can use this material in order to work on other emotional, internal, unconscious level of the patient on other parts of his personality, which is actually spoken on the political level, but it is actually telling us something about his internal emotional level. I don't know if I'm understood here.
Yes, very clear.
No, I'm clear.
Let me ask you a question about that. And I hesitate to ask it because it feels naive, and it may be, so allow me that. You're describing patients who are concerned that bringing up a sensitive topic won't be either acceptable to you or might be hurtful to you, or they're concerned about how you will feel about them if they bring that up. Now, that on the one hand is the everyday work of therapy, not being in Israel, not being, let's say, in mm-hmm. the middle of hostilities. Mm-hmm. Patients on a regular basis have imaginings that if they talk about sexual or aggressive fantasies, mm-hmm. especially those involving the therapist, that the therapist will react in some hurt, angry, retaliatory way. And working through the meaning of their inhibition in speaking freely is the daily work of therapy. Now, yes, that's the question, whether it's different when there's actual violence in wartime. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, it is different because when we're talking about the political level, it's the reality is threatening. It's not only fantasy. It's not only fantasy. It's actually the real world outside the therapeutic room is really threatening. And Jews and Arabs outside of the therapeutic room try not to talk about these things and try only to live in peace with each other, which is not deep peace. It's on the outside level, just to be good neighbors, okay, without talking about the complicated things. So in the therapeutic room, they try, many times that what happens at the beginning of the therapy. And a decade ago, I started to tell my colleagues, well, let's try. There is something big here in the therapeutic room. And if we don't talk about it, so if we don't speak it up in the therapeutic room and in the supervision, during supervision, so there is something missing here. We're not talking about two people who can speak on only on the humanistic level, just to be human one to the other, or a good object one to the other, or we have to talk about what is going outside and how everyone of the this dyad, of this therapeutic dyad, is coming from a threatening group to the other. Okay, so kind of. If I'm working with a Jewish person, and outside he has, on one level or another, that Arabs are not loyal to the country and they can betray us and they can betray me. So who is Roni as an Arab person? Can he betray me in one way? Is he going to be for me and with me all the time, or? And one day he will become a stereotypical Arab and betray all the Jews. This fantasy is similar to any other fantasy on the therapeutic room, but it has a very strong backup from the reality world. Okay? And that's the difference. So we have to talk about the fantasy and at the same time about the reality.
I hear you.
To talk about the reality, and this thing I used to call it, there's a big elephant in the room. Okay, if we don't talk about this elephant, so something is there's no enough space in the room because this elephant is occupying too much space of this therapeutic room on the symbolic way, okay, on the symbolic level. So we have to clear this elephant up in order to be able to have to use all this space, all this emotional space inside us, and to make this container bigger and stronger container. If this elephant is inside the therapeutic room, so the container will be very narrow.
And what happens when you do let the patient know that you are open to talk about what is otherwise presumed to be unspeakable?
Well, different patients use it in different ways. Okay, there are some people even use it. There are some Jewish patients who used my Arab identity or Arab Palestinian identity in a positive way to strengthen the treaty. For example, I remember a Jewish young man who tried all the time not to go to the army. And when he knew that I am Arab, he said, oh, great, you're Arab. So because other Jewish therapists will think that I'm trying to escaping from the army and I am in not good enough Jewish Israeli citizen. But you are, as an Arab, you will understand me in a better way. Okay. So it's not always a threatening. Sometimes it it is in a positive way, okay? But usually the suspicious feelings come to the front.
Though I imagine with that patient you mentioned, the fantasies about what the Jewish therapist will think of him, just like his fantasies of what you, an Arab therapist, will think of him, are to be taken up as his imaginings, no?
Yeah, but this is the beginning. We had to talk and work with
sure.
this.
Got it.
After that, for example, what is a Jewish patient, which is he's Jewish, this is mother, let's say, mother identity or mother group, okay?
Uh-huh.
Later, we knew that he had difficulties as a child with a mentally ill mother. And he tried to escape from this mother and not to be living with her. So probably that what is his feeling towards that Jewish identity. This is his mother identity.
Right.
And he is trying to escape to better mother, which is actually the Arab identity, that she the Arab identity will be better for him than his Jewish yeah. identity, which is kind of symbol.
So that's mother. Taking these, let's call it large group affiliations as manifest content to be opened up and explored mm-hmm. and to discover the meaning
yeah,
of
yeah.
is how
sometimes
I hear
sometimes they do manifest internal dynamics which are not related to politics, but just to internal conflictual dynamic emotional world. Yeah,
right.
Sometimes they do.
You've mentioned that your work in supervision also carries these extra meanings or extra identifications. Can you share with us about that?
Well, as a young therapist, I felt many times that my strong political conflicts inside me cannot come in its full manner to the supervisor, because I'm afraid that the supervisor will not be able to contain this conflict, and sometimes even my anger or my anger actually toward the Jews or the Israeli nation or the Jewish nation or whatever you call it, because most of the supervisors in Israel and most of the senior therapists in Israel are Jews. This profession is relatively new in the Arab society. Okay, therapy and dynamic therapy is relatively new. So most of the senior supervisors are Jews. So when I need a good supervision, I go to Jewish supervisors for at least the last decade. Okay, today it's different, a little bit different. So I didn't feel that I have the freedom to bring all my political conflicts and all my conflicts in my Palestinian-Israeli identity to the supervision. So I have to deal with these conflicts on myself. And today, when I am supervising myself, I'm much more aware of what are the supervisees are dealing with. Either they are Arabs or Jewish. Because even Jewish young therapists, when they come to my supervision, they do have these feelings about me and about their patients. Actually, even if they're Jews, that there are different ethnic groups inside the Jewish society in Israel. And sometimes they have stereotypes towards these groups. So dealing with this stereotypes needs awareness. And being Arab supervised by Jews, making me much more aware even to other ethnic relations inside Israel. But if we go back to how to some clinical work, from my work with Jewish patients. Mm-hmm. I remember this. I reported this case also in one of my papers. A young man in my age, almost my age, or even a little bit older than mine, came to my therapy for somatic symptoms, psychosomatic symptoms. And after 4 or 5 months of therapy, of weekly therapy, I sent him back to his psychiatrist in order to rethink the medications. Okay, probably I thought that he needs less medications because. And when he came back on the next session, he told me, "I didn't know you were Arab." And me as a young patient, I was very shocked. Okay, and I said, "Well, how did you know?" I couldn't deal with this surprise in a better way. He said, my psychiatrist told me that although Ronnie is Arab, he's a good therapist. And I was shocked of him being surprised, and I was shocked of what my colleague said, that although being Arab, he's a good therapist, kind of saying that usually Arabs are not that good. And that made the therapy become less beneficial. It became more concrete. Something in the therapy was changed after this session. Okay, because I also knew after asking him, "How is it for you that knowing I am an Arab?" He said, "Well, I am a settler as well, and I didn't know that either. But I have good Arab friends." And that made me kind of, what are we hiding from each other here? And it pushed me to go and to retest all this identity of mine, being Palestinian and Israeli at the same time. But I couldn't work that on the supervision. I worked that through on my therapy with my Jewish therapist. Okay, I went out and checked my Israeli identity and my Palestinian identity. And the peak of it was on the Memorial Day of the Israeli soldiers who were died on the Israeli-Palestinian wars, or the Israeli-Arab wars. There's one day in the year that is a Memorial Day for these soldiers, and we have 2 minutes that we have to stand up, respecting their memorial. And me as Palestinian said, "I don't want to stand up." This year, and that specific year, I said, "I will not stand up. I don't want to respect the memorial of those soldiers who are killing my nation." Well, this is the peak of the conflict. Being Israeli, respecting the Israeli soldiers, and being Palestinian and feeling that my people are being killed. So who am I loyal to? And the time that we had to stand up was 10 minutes after my therapy sessions will be finished with my therapist. And I told my therapist, "I will not stand." And she tried to told me, "Well, that will probably be a little bit dangerous if you are on the street. Everybody is standing, and you will go ahead continuing walking. This is a really dangerous situation, okay? Because people will probably talk to me in a very unrespecting way, or probably will be violent towards me. But I was very stubborn and said, no, I will do it. And I did it. And nobody hurted me. But I felt that I have to act this out in order to say I am angry and conflicting and splitting up inside myself. And a few sessions after that, I was angry on my therapist and told her, she tried to say, well, I can understand how can you feel as an Arab in Israel? And I was very angry and said, you cannot understand that because you send your children to the Israeli army. You are living in an occupied territory. And I was very angry on her. And she really succeeded to contain that. And then I tried to think with myself and work that anger through in my therapy. Asking myself, what do I want? What do I want from her? She's really a good therapist. She's making me a good price. And she's trying to protect me and not to do dangerous things on the street and not to stand up for the memorial memory of the soldiers. She's being good to me. Why am I angry on her? And that made me start to work this conflict of my Israeli and my Palestinian and identity in a deeper level. And when this became a little bit easier inside myself, I could go back to my patient, my settler patient, and try to hear his suspicious towards me and my suspicious towards her, towards him, in a more internal level of his internal dynamics of all the time being not feeling a part of, because he is a new immigrant from an Eastern European country, and he used to feel in his family and in his community not fully part of his family or of his community. And after dealing with my feelings, I could go back to him and hear him in a different way and listen to him in a different way. Only after working on my political counter-transference, let's say, or cultural counter-transference, I could make my internal container wider and more fixed, to say that, and more exact.
Thank you for sharing that, Ronnie. Allow me to read the final paragraph that you wrote about that very case, because it really captures the essence of what you're saying. You write, "This incident led to his talking about his family, immigration experience, and his desire to be part of Israeli society. These wishes are very similar to my wishes to be recognized by Israeli society as legitimately different without having to apologize for my national identity. For a while, my patient and I seemed like two enemies fighting for the right to exist, which is a very legitimate act on the political sphere outside the therapeutic space. But on the symbolic humanistic level, we both were seeking to meet the same need of being seen and accepted."
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's really a lovely description. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. But what he made of it, of being... he wanted to be seen and to be part of the Israeli society. But what he made of it, what I called being more Catholic than the Pope. He wanted to be part of the Israeli society, so he took the extreme way to do it, to be a settler. This is an extreme way of being Israeli.
Mm-hmm.
As a new immigrant, he can live anywhere in Israel, and he doesn't have to go to the settlements in order to say, well, I am a Zionist patriot Zionist and whatever, but he chose this way to deal with his needs, to be Catholic more than the Pope. That's what I quoted in the paper.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're allowing the holding space to be larger so that he could consider all the elements that went into his, what you feel is a hyper reaction to his feeling excluded, is by being, you know, is by being doubly included. It sounds like it was obviously a rich experience for both of you.
Yeah, well, that's right. What you're describing is very right. And I couldn't do this holding in this good way without feeling that somebody is holding me from outside, and not to be split between my Israeli and Palestinian identity. I had to work that out and to live in peace inside me with these two identities. Well, there is no way to live in full peace with these two conflicted identities. It's all the time to work on them. Every time there is a political violence outside in the reality, this conflict inside is aware again, and have to work on it again and again and again in my therapy with my colleagues. But the main thing that today I'm not afraid to open it with anybody, okay? Because I can hold my anger on it. I can see it in more integrative way. And during the last 10, 15 years, the issue and the professional level here in Israel became more legitimate to be spoke of, because there are more Arab professionals, more Arab therapists that can share their experience with the Jewish therapist, and the experiences became more known to each other, and the narratives became more familiar one to each other. On the professional level, but unfortunately not on the reality outside.
And the paper where you describe that patient is from 2015. So this is both recent, but not so recent. It's been out in the environment. Let me just read the name of the paper. It's referenced in the show notes. It's Transference and Counter-Transference Issues During Times of Violent Political Conflict, The Arab Therapist and Jewish Patient Dyad.
Right.
And you're saying that psychotherapy is now more accepted in the Palestinian community. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. Yes. Well, the Arab society in Israel is going through a huge social changes from a more village, a farmer society, agricultural, and big families, through the modernization that we're going through as part of the Israeli state and as a part of the globalization, many things are changing on this society. We have today smaller families, less agriculture, more academic, more education. And as part of this change is also the psychology and psychotherapy is becoming more and more familiar and more acceptable in this society. Also in Israel, also in the West Bank, and as well in the Arab, in other Arab countries, in Egypt and Jordan.
That's what I was wondering. Does the urbanization of the Israeli-Palestinian community, does that lead to any conflict about allegiances to a less urban Palestinian community outside of Israel?
Well, we know we Arabs inside Israel, Arab Palestinians inside Israel, we don't have much contact with the other Arab world. Only with Egypt and Jordan, because they have peace agreements with Israel. So we don't know exactly what is going in the other Arab countries, and not if we know, we know a little bit, not much. Okay, but what is going here inside Israel, even in the Arab society, we are in Arab Palestinians in Israel, we are about 1 million, a little bit more than 1 million people. And even in this 1 million community, which is a relatively small community, we have differences inside. Some of the Arab Palestinian community in Israel are living in cities like Haifa and like Jerusalem, Akko, and others live in towns and smaller villages. Some are Christians and some are Muslims and some are Druze. And these are three different religions. Some have agricultural lifestyle and some have Bedouin lifestyle. You know what Bedouin is?
Mm-hmm.
It's in the desert, in the southern part. So even this 1 million people community have differences inside it. And being aware of this ethnic differences is very important. As well as inside the Jewish community in Israel, there are differences, there are ethnic differences between Orthodox religious, people who are not religious, between people come from Ethiopia, people come from Russia. There are differences even inside the communities, and we have to be aware of this ethnic differences. And I call it, I'm trying, and I teach a course in the university about this issue, and I call it cultural competence. So actually to know the ethnic differences and to know how to work with it. Okay. On different levels as well, on the reality level and on the transference and the counter-transference level. And the Arab-Jewish relation is a very specific dyad among all these ethnic dyads that can be in Israel. It's more complicated. It's not only ethnic differences. It has only political and sometimes violent and war, which make it really complicated.
And it's something that the rest of the world is also struggling with. What does it mean for the two people in the office to be from the same, let's call it large group, and what it's like when it's from different large groups, and how does each of those pairings both reveal and hide some of those internal issues that you so beautifully described getting access to.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for sharing what you have shared, both in your writing and in our conversation today. It is, for me, it shows many things. It shows the power of this process that we engage in, mm-hmm. the power to both really honor outside reality, but not limit our honoring to just that, but also to honor and be curious about the inner reverberations that reflect that outside reality. And your work and your clinical examples, both that you spoke of and that you've written about, are deeply dynamic. They are deeply attuned to the inner life of the patient. And you're also deeply attuned and really warmly honest about your own internal life and how you bring that to the work and to your writing and to this conversation. So I want to thank you for spending time with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. That was really good talk.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.